Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to this episode of the Simply Financial Podcast. This is Season 4, Episode Number 11. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra.
My guest today is Teddy Cummins, and I wanted to have Teddy on the show. We've had a number of discussions, especially recently, and he's got some really great stories and thoughts on money. He's had a very interesting path to a successful retirement. He and I also have some great conversations because we're both history geeks. I'll ask Teddy when I bring him on if he agrees with the geek part. But we swap book ideas, and when we're together, we often talk about World War II history, especially aviation military history. So we have that in common. So, Teddy, thanks for spending a few minutes with me today.
All right.
Is it okay that I describe you as a history geek?
Yeah, that's fine. I am what I am.
So much of what I wanted to talk to you about, we've kind of covered at least a little bit when we've been together, including I was with you and your wife at dinner a few weeks back. But maybe we could just start at the beginning and get listeners kind of on the same page with you and I. You grew up, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Mississippi.
Okay.
I was just average family. I didn't consider myself poor. I didn't consider myself anything, to be honest with you. You know, we were just a normal family. My parents didn't have money. They both worked. I remember them, you know, saving money just to buy tires, you know, for the car, or I'd hear them talk about it. Really, the only savings I think they had would be like a Christmas club account where you would save a little money, then be able to buy Christmas gifts, you know. But I just considered myself average person growing up in the South.
So in the moment when you were young and when you were a teenager, you didn't really categorize your family. You didn't think about it much. Is that right?
No. All my friends were the same.
And looking back on it. But looking back on it now, with having been around the block a few times and a retirement-aged individual now, looking back on it, how would you describe it?
I think about it often. I waste more money than my parents ever thought about having. You know, I mean, just going out to eat, buying toys, or, you know, it's a completely different world from what I grew up in, money-wise. You know, it's no object for me to go buy anything I want, you know. My
right.
Parents never had that opportunity.
So would you describe your life as achieving the American dream, given what you just spoke about?
Oh, yes. Yes. I couldn't, and I have joked about it in the past. If I had sat down at a young age and planned my life, I probably would have screwed it up. Everything just worked. You know, it just worked out. You know, it's better than I could have dreamed. You know, say a senior in high school, if they would have said, what do you want to do in life? You know. If it would have went with what I said in high school, I wouldn't be where I am now. You know, just the meeting the people, the learning about money later on in life, how to save money, all that, you know, it is a dream, you know.
And can I ask you this, Teddy, because I've never been to Mississippi. I'm a Yankee. I grew up in New York City, and I live in Connecticut. Never been to Mississippi. Did you grow up in rural Mississippi, like farming community mostly? Can you, just because,
yes,
again, I'm a northerner,
yes,
kind of paint a picture,
yes,
for me, kind of where you grew up in Mississippi?
Yes, it was a rural community. You know, our school, they call it a consolidated because it was you know, kids from all over the county would ride buses to the school. You know, it was a small rural town, you know, but we didn't know any different, you know, other than going in the library and reading a newspaper or something. We didn't know how other parts of the country lived. We were just, to us, we were normal.
And Teddy, you mentioned a moment ago about your parents perhaps saving for something like tires. In thinking about your upbringing and what you've accomplished financially over your lifetime, achieving the American dream, can you think back to any of what you learned about money when you were growing up?
No, I didn't have it. The only thing I can say is when I did get out of junior college and get a job, I bought everything I could charge. You know, I guess I had felt like I had done without growing up. And just as soon as I got on my own, I charged and bought everything I could. You know, it was wrong, but I guess having to do without at a young age, just as soon as I got on my own, I'd ask my wife, can we afford it? And she said, yeah, charge it, you know. So
debt was not, do you know if your parents used debt?
My mother saved on absolutely everything. I mean, I can tell you stories of how she would freeze her SOS pad to make it last longer. You know, she was a penny pincher. And my brothers and I talk about it, you know, I guess because she was such a penny pincher, we are just the opposite. You know, if we see something we want it, we go buy it, you know. So.
All right. And so you mentioned now you get out of junior college, you said, and you had this kind of pent-up demand. You're making some money, and you had gone without. And
right.
So when did that phase end, and how did it end where I assume it occurred to you that you were not managing your money wisely, because the Teddy I know is not really going to be attracted to debt and living above your means. So can you walk me through as a young man and a young husband how that change came about after you went through this phase of charging?
My first wife and I were married, I think, 13 years, and we got a divorce, and I was very bad in debt. But I learned that the material things in life mean nothing. You know, the motorcycles, the cars, the shotguns. You know, once you lose all that and you stop and look at the big picture, that stuff doesn't mean anything. And really, the divorce from my first wife made me realize, you know, there's more to being happy than just going buying stuff. You know, and it took me years to get out of debt after my first marriage because I had charged so much. And I kept the bills and gave the house to her and my son because I felt like I had made the mistake, so it was my job to pay all my bills off, you know. But that was an eye-opener for me, the divorce, you know.
So can I ask, Teddy, when you were divorced, how old were you?
Ooh, around 30, 31, something like that.
And is it fair to say after the divorce, after this debt accumulated, that your views on debt were never the same?
Correct. I just didn't. It was not the debt. I guess I was trying to find happiness by buying stuff. And that doesn't make one happy. At least it didn't for me. You know, I still at the time after my divorce, I didn't have money, and I still wasn't wise as far as saving money. I learned that between my first marriage and my second marriage.
And you met some people along the way that helped you manage money more wisely and led to your eventual financial success. I know you said, and appropriately so, that money is not the most important thing, far from it. But
right.
you met some people along the way in this phase after the first divorce that kind of helped you. Can you touch on that a bit?
Yes. I was real down after my divorce, and my supervisor at work, I guess he thought I was suicidal or something, I don't know. But he called me in his office, and we sat down and talked, and he explained to me what I was going through in life as was really nothing. And he talked about he fought in Italy during the Second World War, and he told me the hardships that he and his other soldiers went through. And he suggested I go read a few World War II books and let me realize how tough life can be. So I started reading World War II books, go to the library, checking them out. And in the meantime, I was finding veterans, local veterans, and talking to them. And a friend of mine mentioned that there was a man downtown that flew P-47 Thunderbolts during the war. So I made an appointment on an off day to go down and see him, and he just happened to be a broker. But I didn't go in thinking about money. All I was wanting to talk about was the war. But while we were talking, I had an envelope in my pocket, and it was a savings account I had started at the bank for my son's college. And after we talked about the war, he asked me what was in my envelope, and I told him. And he started explaining mutual funds. He was big in the Putnam firm. And he explained what I could do with my money, and really he opened my eyes up to saving money. He was my start, you know.
And so just to be clear, broker, back in previous generations, instead of using the term that's more common today, like I'm a certified financial planner, typically we'll use the term financial advisor. There's different terminology in my industry, Teddy. But
yeah.
at that time, stockbroker was the more common term, you know, because I wanted to point that out for listeners, because today, usually broker would be more like a mortgage broker, and
right.
the stockbroker
right.
terminology is kind of fallen by the wayside.
Now, that's what I called him. He never called himself a broker.
Okay.
To me, I mean, I didn't have any knowledge of money or anything. But to me, he was, hey, this guy's a broker. He buys stocks, you know. I mean, I was very ignorant. And that's the reason I called him a broker, because I didn't know any better, you know.
And so did he, so you invested money with him?
Yes. He got me into mutual funds. And once I started saving money, it became a game. You know, I wanted to see how much I could save, and I could learn about investing, and it just skyrocketed from there, you know.
So did he educate you?
Yes. Yes.
So he was a good teacher and coach.
Yes. It was so I have told this story before. About this time my father retired. And I had been investing for maybe a couple years, and I went to see my father, and we were talking, and just jokingly, he said, can I borrow some money? And I said, yeah, what for? And he says, I got to pay my taxes on my 401. And I said, I asked him, where do you have your 401? And he said, in the bank. I said, in the bank? And I didn't say anything, but I went home and thought about it, and I called my parents. They lived about 45 miles away. And I said, y'all have a appointment with Mr. Harding tomorrow at 10 o'clock, which was a lie. But they said, okay, we'll be there. Well, then I called Mr. Harding. I said, my parents are going to come there and talk to you. My parents knew anything. They didn't know anything about saving money or
okay.
investing. And after just, I don't know how long they talked. I wasn't there. But after they talked to my broker, as I call him, Mr. Harding, they went back to their hometown and found an advisor or whatever there, and they got my father's 401, put it in different mutuals. They, at the time, were drawing out 0.5% a month to subsidize their income. And that got my parents involved in savings. You know, they, 65 years old and knew nothing about it. You know, our family just, we were ignorant to saving money other than a savings account at the bank.
Very good. You, so your interest in history comes from a little bit of a low point in your life, and by looking at history, military history in particular, it was sort of inspirational for you in terms of appreciating what others sacrificed and the hardships, so that then it became easier for you to have a positive outlook? Am I overstating that?
No, no. If you think, you know, if you think your life is hard, are you going through some bad times, just pick up a book and read what other men have done, other women. You know, I mean, you don't have, believe me, you don't have a hard life. You know, to me, it's like going to a hospital with an ache. Then you just walk down the hallway and look at the people in there that really have problems. You realize you're not in the pain you think you are, you know. There's always somebody that has sacrificed more than what you have. And it just makes you realize, you know, you got a great life. Don't bitch, you know.
So I'm curious, though, because clearly now you're not at a low point like you were back then, yet you're still interested in military history. You still read a lot. You enjoy talking about the topic. So you still get that out of reading military history today, or has your interest in reading about that topic changed over time? I'm just curious.
I don't read it, I guess, as much now to realize their hardships. You know, it fascinates me what people went through, especially during the Second World War. But it's just fascinating how, and I have said it before, I can read books about a German soldier, and the second chapter, I forget I'm reading about a German. His feelings were the same as the Americans. It's really unreal, you know, what people went through back then.
Very, very good. I want to talk next, change gears a bit. You get married a second time, right?
Correct.
And you're working, and you're wiser with money, and you're getting closer to retirement. And could you share with me a little bit of you had some decisions to make in regarding your career and where you wanted to live, and you ended up moving to Florida. So can you take me through a little bit of that phase of your life, what you were thinking, and some of the big decisions you made during that time?
Well, the town we lived in was very poor, and poverty breeds crime. I mean, that's just a fact of life. And I could see my hometown, the town I was born in, I worked in my whole life, my wife the same way. I could see it declining. And I knew years and years ago that there was no way I could retire. You know, I couldn't retire from work and just stay at home. I was going to have to move. My goal then was, when I married my present wife, Suzanne, I told her, I said, we're going to save so much a month, and the rest we can spend. Saving was my number one priority. Once I had saved X number of dollars that month, then we could go out and eat, you know, buy a car, whatever. But saving was the number one. And she went along with me. She didn't understand it. And it was kind of funny. I would take motorcycle trips with the guys at work, and I would write on a piece of paper where the money was in case something happened to me, because she didn't know. She didn't care. You know, she kind of left that up to me. And, you know, savings was – and it was funny because it wasn't just me. After I had met Mr. Harding and started saving, men from work would call me over and ask me about saving money. And even my superintendent called me in the office one day, and I was wondering, what have I done? Well, I get down there, he was thinking about retirement, won't know where to put his money. Hell, I was the genius. You know, hell, I barely can read and write, but I knew more about the guy than the men I worked with. And at night, I would open the paper up at work, you know, and I'd say, oh, I made X number of dollars today. And they would, oh, you can't do that. But I ended up getting, because of my relationship with Mr. Harding, the broker, I passed it on to other guys at work. It was just, I guess, our culture. We never were taught money, how to save. But once you learn, and it's a good feeling. You know, it's a good feeling. I tell a story a couple years ago, a young guy in our, he works. Everybody in my bicycle club is retired. But this young guy would show up on Saturday. He's a worker. And he asked me one day about saving money. And okay. I was sitting there talking to him, and everybody was standing around. And one was a financial advisor, retired. But I told him, I says, the only thing you need to do is get in the habit of saving money. And I says, you can do it different ways. By some banks offer, have a financial service, and they can have an automatic draft come out of your checking account. I said, there's a million ways you can do it, but just start saving money, get in a habit, and then once you get in that habit, then you can find you an advisor, and you will learn how to save. And 2 years later, he comes up and thanks me, you know.
Really?
Yes. Yes. And this guy has a – he is – well, he's an endocrinologist. What is it? The one that does root canals.
Okay.
Yeah. But he didn't know how to save.
So,
you know,
the,
and it, can it's I ask amazing you at the people that don't know how to save money.
Yeah. And how young is this gentleman? I mean, he was not like a 20-year-old, right?
No, he's probably late 30s, I'm guessing.
Well, all right. You know. And I'm just curious, the retired advisor that was with you, is that our mutual friend Dean?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right,
but
cool.
He didn't say anything.
Yes.
He just sit there and listen to me give my spiel about, you know, just get in a habit of saving money. And, you know, once you get some money, then you will get interested in where to invest. It's, you know, it's a learning deal. You know, I said the main thing, you just got to learn how to save. That's your starting point. And once you get there, the rest is easy.
Yeah.
You know, there's you and there's millions of people out there that will help you. But if you don't learn how to save, you know, I mean, that's the number one deal, you know.
So, all right. So now.
And after I did tell him that and we kind of separated, a couple people come up and says that was good advice you gave him, you know.
Yeah, it was. So go back to your saving. You've set up your financial life where you're going to pay yourself first. You're saving X number of dollars every month. And then right. Above and beyond that is money that you and Suzanne could spend and consume. And right. So do you have a goal in mind? You're not going to do this forever, right? So how does that work?
It wasn't a goal. It was just save as much as I could because I was, I was mid-40s, I guess. Well, I was not mid-40s when I was mid-40s when I married Suzanne. I had started saving, you know, earlier when I met Mr. Harding. But when
right.
I married Suzanne and we had two incomes, I was really able to save. And it was not a goal. I was going to save X number of dollars by a certain time. That was not my goal. I knew I had to just put as much as I could in, you know.
And okay.
Like I say, it wasn't a goal. It was just I had a small home. It was paid off. Save every penny I can, you know.
Now, you're saving money, everything you can, and are you still enjoying life, or?
Oh, yes. No. I was drag racing at the time. We had three motorcycles. No, I enjoyed life. Don't get me wrong. But saving the money was the priority.
Okay.
You know, once I had put, I had my 401 at work. We had a savings at the bank and had some mutual funds. Then we had just savings accounts where we would save money. Then we would put them in, transfer them into Roth at the end of the year. But, no, we enjoyed life, believe me.
Good. Because to some people listening perhaps would say, oh, saved everything they make, that means that they didn't enjoy life or have fun they missed out.
Like I say,
out.
We had three motorcycles. I drag raced.
That
I took
like
trips
fun.
All over the United States. No, I enjoyed life.
Beautiful. And so, again, you're moving along. You end up leaving Mississippi and moving to Florida, to the Villages. So can you walk me through that?
I have had an uncle that lived in Virginia, and his wife had arthritis, and the weather up there was getting her, so they ended up moving to Florida. And he would call and laugh. He would always, what's the temperature? Well, it was always hotter in Mississippi. The humidity was higher. And he would always brag about the Villages, and there's a dance every night on the square. And he would just go on and on. And finally, one day, I told my wife, he's lying. We're going to go check it out. So we got on the motorcycle, and we come to Florida. We spent a week. And every year we took our vacation, we would come to the Villages and rent. It was a Disney World for adults is the way I described it.
Right.
You know, you can't describe living here. Anything you want to do, anything, it's here. So then we had a goal to one day retire and move to Central Florida, North Central Florida.
How did you decide when the timing was?
There was two young men that had started an investment firm. They got out of school, started an investment firm. They come to my company, and I guess they got permission, but they set up suppers. And we would go eat, and they would explain the finances and how they could invest your money. And I attended one, and it was May the 5th. And I attended the supper and sit there and listened, and everything was great. And I went home with a good feeling, and I woke up the next morning, and my motorcycle was stolen. And I kind of, it's time to leave. And that year, I turned 55, so I contacted the investors, and they come to my house, and I showed them all my monies and my retirement, which would be greatly reduced retiring at 55.
Yeah,
but I felt like I had to move to get out of the crime area.
The crime was worsening, Teddy. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but was worsening.
Oh yes. Oh
okay.
Yes. Yeah, like I say, it was my hometown, and I had seen it. You know, I had a murder 7 doors down. It was just, you can't describe the crime. And I knew at an older age, you couldn't live there. When you're young, that's one thing, but when you get up in years, there weren't any doctors. It was just crime-ridden, you know. It was a sad situation. But after talking to the two advisors about my money, we felt like you know, we can retire, take my early retirement, move, and I knew I was going to have to work. It was the scariest thing I had ever done. I'd worked the same job for 33 and a half years. My wife had never moved further than 7 miles from her home. So for us to move was a big deal. But
did you have to convince Suzanne about moving from Mississippi to Florida, given that you both had such deep roots there? And
Well, she come home from work one day, all upset, a lady. She worked for an accounting firm. And one of the ladies that she worked with had gone home, and they had broken her house and stowed everything.
Right.
Well, that Suzanne knew, you know, we had to leave. You know, I put bars up on the wall, on the windows. But she realized it was a move we had to do. We could not live there, you know. She went along with me. You know, she was as scared as I was about moving financially, moving to a place really not knowing anybody, no doctors. And I mean, it was hard. We weren't the type of people to move around. You know,
it was a great decision though, Teddy. Looking back with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, would you describe it as a great move? No regrets?
No, the best move we've ever made. I mean, we do have a lot of family members that, you know, are 750 miles away, but for us, you know, we don't even know where else would we go. You know, we had to move, and here is just everything we want, you know.
So today you're retired, and how long you been retired now?
Well, I retired early at 55. I worked 40 hours a week for a few years. I don't really know how long. Then I went to 30 hours a week. Then I went to 20. Then I went to 10. Then I said, oh, to hell with it. Just quit, you know. So I did retire at 55, but I did work a few years full time.
Okay.
On the golf course and different things, but, you know.
Have your views on money changed over the years, say, from when you retired at 55 from the job you had for 33 and a half years? Thinking back since then, have your views on money changed at all since being in Florida and making your way to retirement, ultimately retiring? Has it changed at all?
No, I don't think so. You know, I'm still just the same person. I buy my toys, my bicycles and stuff, you know. But we're just common people, you know. We have, I hate to say it, but we have more money than we will ever spend, you know. It's just a good feeling to know that we have the money in the bank or invested. You know, so, it's just the peace of mind to have money is just, you can't describe it. You know, and I see people all the time, and I look at them, and there's some. I met one the other day in my hiking club, in my hiking group, and we kind of started talking about money, three of us, and I realized right quick, I can't talk to these people. You know, they are struggling. They're having to get some of their investment to live. So I kind of just sped up because I'm not in that situation, you know.
I see.
And I see a lot of people, and I think, Lord, if they knew how much money I had in the bank or in my savings, they probably wouldn't even talk to me, you know. You know, I mean, really, there's millions of people out there that need help as far as savings. You know, they really do, young people especially.
Now you're not a free spender, but you touched on this a moment ago. What are some things that you do splurge on, money-wise?
Really not much. I mean, we have just a house. You know, when the TV breaks, we go get a TV. We don't buy a TV just because the new model come out. But, you know, we buy the best TV. We buy the best couch we can find. Money's no object. You know, when we buy a car, we don't go look at the most expensive, but, you know, we keep a good car. Mm-hmm. My bicycles, I got more in my bicycles than I want to admit on tape. Yeah. My wife doesn't even know. You know,
we won't get you in trouble. How about Suzanne? Because she is conservative as you. Is that fair?
More,
right? More. So, is there anything she splurges on?
Shoes.
All right.
She has a real narrow foot, and she's always had trouble finding shoes. And once we retired, she works at the gym, and she works out all the time. She lives at the gym, and she buys tennis shoes. I mean, we went to one store, and she bought every shoe in there that would fit her. You know, I don't care. I mean, you know, if it makes her happy, you know. And we eat out. She doesn't care to cook. And I thought, well, hell, I'm retired. She can retire from the kitchen. So, but she is very, very tight with money, you know. She will question me on about anything. And I tell her, and, of course, it's dropped, you know.
Sure.
But, no, she's very conservative. You know?
Yeah, I know.
She's going to keep me in line. She's going to.
So
if I did get out of line, she would be there to pull me back.
Oh, I have no doubt about that, Teddy. I have spent more time with you than her, but I have no doubt that.
Yeah. You know, two people, my good and her good make us what we are.
Well,
you know, a lot of her good rubbed off on me, and the same lot of my good rubbed off on her.
So, as we wrap up, Teddy, and thank you so much for being so open and genuine in this discussion. So, you know, there's a lot of information out there. We live in a technologically driven, fast-changing world. And in some quarters in this country, they would tell you that you couldn't live the American dream, that especially if you grew up in a poor neighborhood like you did in Mississippi, that you couldn't get out, that you couldn't build wealth, that the odds are too stacked against you. What advice would you give to someone like you and Suzanne that are young? What advice would you give to them about money and wealth building?
Okay. Well, number one, I was an hourly worker. I did not make a lot of money. In Mississippi, you know, an hourly worker, the wages are not that high.
Okay.
And we were just common people. But, I don't know what other people have, but I would compare my savings, the money I have in cash, with my pay with anybody. I mean, I have friends and kinfolk that make gobs of money, and I doubt very seriously if they have much more than I have.
Okay.
But one thing I tell my nieces and my nephews and young people, anybody I can see and talk to, it doesn't matter how much money you make. The only thing matters is how much you save. You know, if you're a doctor making I don't know what a year and you don't save, you're not as well off as the man making $10 an hour that saves $20 a week. The only thing matters is what you save. And the peace of mind you get for being financially secure, you can't put words on that. I mean, you can't describe that.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful point, Teddy, the peace of having financial security. And it's not necessarily tied to how much, but just having that peace and contentment and financial security is such a powerful feature of living a good, healthy, fulfilling life. And I think you expressed that beautifully. Thank you.
Well, you know, I watch TV and there's commercials. They sell a plan. If your car breaks, you have this warranty type deal, and they fix your car. Then there's one for your appliances at home that you pay this so much money, and if appliance breaks, they fix it. And I look at that, and it's so sad because they're selling to people that don't have enough money saved up to repair a car or
That's
to replace
right.
an appliance. You know, and it's and the world is, I don't know where in education, I know I didn't learn it from home or from school, you know, how to finance, how to save money, financial. It needs to be taught, you know. But I see it on TV, and it just makes me realize that there's more people that aren't financially secure, can even have enough money in the bank to live a week without a paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sad.
It is sad.
It's sad.
It is sad.
You know. And I joke to my son, he's financially secure, and I joke, and something to be said about money, and I said, it's a horrible problem to have, ain't it? You know, just joking, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with all your money, you know?
Well, yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, a lot of times, for example, clients will say, you know, is there a way we could cut down on all these statements? You know, because it's a regulated world we live in. There's a lot of disclosures
right.
and stuff like that. And I will joke with them that, well, that sure is a high-quality problem because somebody that doesn't have any money isn't getting any statements.
Hey, my wife does the same thing. We open the mailbox and we have statements from you and different. And why are we getting all these? You know, and I said it's the law; they have to send them out.
Yes.
But I said, don't gripe. You know.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and it's a good feeling to know that no matter what happens to me, we have enough money that will take care of my wife, or if I have to go to a home, you know, that. At the age I'm at now, that's the good feeling.
Beautiful.
You know, she's going to be taken care of no matter what. I'm going to be taken care of. You know, that's the peace of mind we have.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing your journey. It's very impressive, the achievement of the American dream and such a peace and contentment when it comes to money and finance. We could do much worse than follow your lead. So thanks for joining me. If you're a listener, please go to www.elliottwealth.com where you could get more information about my work as a certified financial planner and the team we have here that helps our clients win with money and increase their financial IQ. If you're not a client, you could sign up for a complimentary initial consultation. Additionally, please subscribe to the podcast. That would be great. Thanks again, Teddy. I'll talk to you soon off air. Thanks.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.